Hello, and welcome to Revolutionize Your Love Life. Do you want to know more about love relationships, what makes them work, how to create the one of your best dreams? Do you want to be in a really healthy, juicy love relationship? In these podcasts, we will give ideas and practical advice to light your way. Whether you're looking for a love partner, already in a relationship you wish could be better, or leaving one that has run its course, there will be something to inspire, empower, and support you. Revolutionize Your Love Life is a fortnightly podcast where you will access the knowledge and wisdom of love experts and relationship coaches from across the world to help you find true fulfillment in love. I am your host, Heather Garbutt. Welcome.
Hi, I'm here again today with Janice Formicella. She is a powerhouse of information. Today, we're going to talk about surviving domestic violence. First, a little bit about Janice. She's a breakup coach and the host of the podcast Sex and the Solo Girl and Breakups, Broken Heart, and Moving On. She's passionate about helping people from all backgrounds to beat their breakup, overcome loneliness, and make the end of a relationship the start of a powerful new beginning. She's also a survivor of domestic violence herself and now uses her own story to support others and raise awareness about the harmful impact of victim blaming. Welcome, Janice.
Thank you so much for having me back, and thank you for covering an important topic that is not being discussed enough, in my opinion.
I totally agree. I think probably what people will be interested in first off is your own story.
Thank you. I've really only become fully comfortable talking about it maybe in the last 2 years and this previous year. So October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month in the United States. And I really started going for it this past year. So I'm thankful for the opportunity to come on and tell the world more about it. My story, everyone's story is unique. And a lot of the same patterns and storyline are shared with survivors. I was divorced when I got divorced when I was quite young, having been married quite young, having grown up in a very, very religious community where that's what we did. And I mentioned because I didn't have an understanding of healthy relationships. I did not have some of the life skills necessary to adult after I got divorced. I certainly did not want to be single. And while I went through my divorce pretty well, I met someone a year and a half after. And I was actually in a pretty good place at the time. I was not vulnerable. That's an aspect of victim blaming that I will discuss. People say that survivors were vulnerable when they met their perpetrator, and I just don't buy into that at all. That was not my state of being at the time. I had never met anyone like this before. I had always been internationally minded. I was living in New York at the time. Most of my friends were expats, if not expats, were very worldly people. That's how I had always envisioned myself being when I was growing up, at least. This was a man who was from Germany, who had grown up in Israel. He was drop dead gorgeous. I mean, we had gotten stopped at the mall once. Someone asked him to model. I mean, he was very, very charming as well and took a liking to me. I'm thinking that he's, you know, everything that I wanted. He even lived in Germany. He had been visiting friends in New York. And I have to say, these were friends that we had in common. And so just everything just kind of seemed like a good situation for me, I suppose. However, I did still think it was going to be a fling. And so we had a great week while he was there. like I said, definitely had taken a liking to me. I thought it was just going to kind of be one and done, so to speak. When he returns to Europe, I discover that that's not all what he had in mind. He became completely obsessed with me, called me as soon as he got back to Germany. I wasn't even really expecting to necessarily speak with him again. And from there on out, constant calling, messaging, poetry, sending gifts. I completely fell for him. In fact, I wasn't even annoyed at first, at least, that he was being so overbearing. I thought it was so exciting. You know, this, he was also a PhD student at Cambridge, and I've always been into very academic men. And so I just thought that it was great. I thought he was so romantic, and completely, before I realized what was happening, I was in way over my head, and we became exclusive. He
love bombed you.
Yep. And I'm going to talk about, so this was many years ago, as I said, during the episode on Breakup Brain, I'm younger or older than I look. And at the time, talking about love bombing was not in the zeitgeist. It was not in our consciousness. Friends of mine who today would have warned me against this celebrated and encouraged it and thought, wow, this guy is great. He got me the most extravagant promise ring with this ruby. I got it appraised at $8,000 one day. And this was within a couple months, you know, so completely inappropriate to give somebody a ring at all, much less a promise ring that, you know, costs $8,000 when you've already been dating them for a couple of months. But like I said, when my friends saw it, they are like, hell yeah. And today, yeah, people would be very concerned. And then, so he came to New York, told me he loved me after, again, just probably a month and a half or so, stayed with me. It was when he stayed with me, and again, we'd been talking for only about a month and a half at this point. He did reveal the abuse early on, and he was staying with me, and it was shocking. I didn't know what to do because he's, like I said, staying with me. And then by the time he went back to Germany, I had already agreed to move there with him. And again, when I told people, including my parents, everybody thought it was great. Like, how exciting. Wow. Like, look at this guy. And so I go over there. He paid for me to move to Germany. And
so all of this is creating obligation, giving you a ring, paying for things. Yeah.
Then going in and living with him. There had been a lot of signs before I went that today I would hope that I would have acted upon. And I say I hope because I feel like this can happen to anyone, and you don't really know what you are going to do. And so I don't want to say, oh, I definitely wouldn't. I had actually in college worked at our campus safe shelter space. So I had plenty of knowledge of domestic violence. In fact, I had also worked at a shelter, and it happened to me. So I go over there, and it was within days that I realized I was in a bad situation, like bad. He was abusive almost immediately. His family, who lived in the same building, he also was very wealthy. And I lived in the high rise that his family owned. So again, pretty exciting stuff. His family had me over for dinner one day. He, of course, was sleeping one off, because he was also an alcoholic, I discovered. And they came to me, barely knowing me, asking me to help him with his drinking. And I had not realized, when I had spent time with him before, how advanced his alcoholism was. When he was in New York, he drank a lot. I'm telling myself, you know, it's because he's on holiday and he's traveling. And no, absolutely not. It was because he was an alcoholic and a very abusive one. And it started getting physical almost immediately. Again, I didn't know what to do. I had just thrown the life that I had out the window to go and be with him. Plus the fact that in between, I mean, it was the typical cycle of violence where in between these incidents, just loving and showering me with gifts. And it was actually quite a nice life in between. To add to all of this, his parents had bought him an apartment and had given all the responsibility of furnishing it to me. I'm like, whoa, oh my, like, this is so cool. Who would have ever thought? It was a huge sprawling apartment. And I just think in the back of my head that, oh, I don't want to give this away. Like, what a great opportunity. Like, look at this life I'm going to have. And then I go to introduce him to my parents back in the States and got the thumbs up from everyone in my family, partially because perpetrators are very charming. They know what they are doing. He completely won them over. They encouraged me to stay with him. And he was violent towards me during our stay. And I actually did tell my parents about the incident. And they still, you know, said it's probably a one-off. And made, you know, that's not so bad. I'd been laying on the couch and he came up behind me and pulled my hair to make me look at him. We weren't even fighting. He got pissed about something. And so I ended up staying with him. And then once I forgave him for all these things up to this point, it just got worse and worse and worse. It was absolutely, absolutely terrifying. I ended up, even his parents gave me a spare apartment that I could go and stay in if he got violent. And everybody wanted us to stay together, but it was just like, you know, in case he has an episode or something, here's the keys to this place. It was horrible. I went back to the States having left him two or three more times. And then after doing that for so long, it got worse and worse and very controlling. I lost almost all of my friends. It's really hard to support someone who's staying in this type of cycle. When you go and they support you, you know, the first time you leave, they can get behind that. But when you're going back for support over and over and over again, when they've told you how they feel and when you've decided to go back despite everything, people can get worn out. And yeah, before I knew it, I really had any friends.
And they feel betrayed and left and diminished.
Yeah, and frustrated. And there was also financial abuse, pretty severe even. And so I also just didn't know how I would navigate life. I didn't have any money. I wouldn't have been able to get my own apartment. I was freelancing at the time. He was very controlling of my time. He didn't want me to work. He would prevent me from working. Sometimes he wasn't working, so we'd be at home during the day while I was trying to get things done, and he would either be drinking or just worked up about it. And so I had also lost some clients as well. But it got to the point where it was untenable and very dangerous. I never knew when I was going to set him off. The physical aspect of it was escalating constantly. And then at one point he started drinking very heavily again. And by the way, I had also supported him to go through rehab at one point, which isolated me even more because I'm now living alone in Germany without even my partner, because he said the only way that he would do it was if I stayed and supported him and came to visit him on the weekends, which I did. But he was never really committed to sobriety. After he got home from rehab, it was even more violent. And yes, one weekend there was actually a series of assaults, and including one night dragging me out of the apartment by, again, my hair and my waist. And I had no choice but to get the cops involved. In fact, I wasn't even the one who called them. And then he was arrested, went to jail, and that was a horrible experience. And it was also the impetus to leave for good, because I'm telling myself in my mind, an arrest and jail time is a really big thing for a big hurdle for a couple to overcome. And I didn't really see how we'd be able to make it work after that. And so I had to have my parents fly me back to the States, because he had essentially taken all of the money that I had in my account. And I finally, yeah, left for good.
Well done. You know, the worst things have happened to people when they haven't been able to leave. I'm so glad that you could see a sort of crystal clear moment of this has got to be the end.
Yeah, I think it would have continued to get worse. In fact, I'm a true crime girl, and it is very disturbing and hard to watch some of the shows where the stories are very similar to mine. And yeah, the woman ended up dead.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, that's the truth that can happen.
Yeah. And it was very devastating for me. I've not been diagnosed with PTSD, but I had all the classic symptoms. I couldn't eat. I was startled easily. I couldn't drive myself around. My weight plummeted. I was not able to care for myself. I did heal from it. And now, as you said, use my story to help others. But it was a really dark time in my life. And I know we're going to talk about victim blaming, but that certainly didn't make it any easier. And hopefully we'll circle back to that.
Okay, yes. Yes. I'm so glad you're out of that, and you've been out of it a long time, and you've made something so much more rich for yourself. So glad.
Thank you. Yes, I have. It's still hard to think about. It never really leaves you.
Yeah.
But yes, I'm thankful for that as well. And now I'm glad that I get to talk about it.
Yes. And I'm sort of sorry to ask you, and I know that you want to. Because it's in service to others to make sure people don't have to go to such extremes before their lights come on. Yeah.
No, I'm at first, I would have never even volunteered to you that I was a survivor for a number of years. And partially because of the love bombing, or excuse me, partially because of the victim blaming and people talking about lots of, even the fact that love bombing is more in our consciousness, I feel like a lot of more people are also talking about abuse. And I had friends and family who wouldn't even really let me talk about it. And so for a little while, because my story is so extreme, I was worried people weren't even going to believe me. And so I held back talking about it for a long time. In fact, I went almost directly about 3 months after I left him, I moved to Australia for 5 years. And I had a lot of friends who I never told about this. And it had just, you know, happened a few months before. So I feel great to be able to talk openly about it.
I'm so glad. I'm so glad. It's really important stuff. And you're right. People don't talk about love bombing. Didn't talk about love bombing, but they do now, and they've got more of a sense of why it's so difficult to leave because of the love bombing and then the abuse and love bombing and then the abuse. It's a sort of conditioning that we always go back and look for try and make the loving times come back again, as if it's our responsibility. That happens so frequently. And also the other person can make us feel that they're dependent on us for their well-being, and that we are really, really important to them, and they won't manage without us. So they get you with either seduction or guilt.
Yeah, I mean, the first time I left, he did what is somewhat typical of threatening his life if I didn't come back. And I knew that he was in a rough spot. Another layer of the story is that his older brother died by suicide during our relationship. And so I, of course, had compassion for him. And when he was telling me that he was going to do the same, of course, I still cared about him, or I thought I did. And yeah, of course, that got into my head. And I was very willing to go back after that.
Yeah, because you could feel it could be a tangible reality.
it could. And he, because of his, partially because of his alcoholism and partially because he's as close to a monster as you can get, he did not have hardly any friends. And so he was all alone. And I felt responsible for him as his partner.
Yeah.
And his parents also put a lot of pressure on me to help him. And they didn't know what to do. And, you know, they were fed up with him for a long time. And I think that they felt relieved to have somebody else bear the burden.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah. Yeah. So let's look at the red flags. You know, how do you see this coming and avoid it?
Almost all abusers will love bomb. And so please go and educate yourself on the dynamic of love bombing. They will overwhelm you with compliments. They will act as though they've never met anyone like you before. They will act like they are the ones being swept off their feet. They will a lot of times buy a lot of gifts really quickly, which that can seem really exciting. In my case, in my marriage, my husband had some hangups on money that my new boyfriend did not. And so I don't want to speak poorly about him, but he was a penny pincher. We didn't do the exciting things. He didn't buy me lots of gifts. We didn't buy a lot of things, even though he actually made a great living. But he just, you know, like I said, had some mental hangups around saving and things like this. And so when I have somebody buying me these extravagant gifts, I am loving it. Also, my love language happens to be gifts. And trips as well. I mean, I know one weekend, you know, we're living in New York. He wakes up and says, we're going to Vegas. And we did. And also along the lines of love bombing, be aware that they will dominate your time as much as possible in any way that they can. He lived in Germany. I was living in New York. It was all day long. He expected me to keep in touch with him, to message him back right away, stay on the phone with him. At night, we would Skype for hours. I would tell him, I am leaving. I am going to do this. I am getting on the subway right now. He would be getting angry with me if I still didn't keep in touch with him, and then maybe message him as soon as I got off the subway. I did not want to upset him. He was somehow given full access to me. And it started to isolate me from my friends. It made it harder for me to work. At first, I was just telling myself, you know, he's just that in love with me. But it was a very, very bad indication. A lot of people who love bomb will also be asking you to be exclusive right away. Again, you don't need to be exclusive with someone after a month or two. They will say they love you very early on. Again, I think that's inappropriate to be telling someone you love them when you barely met them, or when you've only been together for a month, or you haven't had the time to know that. Like, how do you know you love someone if you just met them? They will do that too. So yes, the love bombing, keep your eyes out for that. Educate yourself about it. And another classic sign is the isolation. When he came to stay with me in New York, before I knew it, he was getting in fights with these friends of mine who had introduced me to him. Somehow, I mean, looking back, the things that he was upset about were so small, but he couldn't have been happier to be in these conflicts with these people and then be demanding that I didn't spend time with them. Not only that, but a lot of people who engage with perpetrators will not want to be around them. And so even if they're not demanding you to cut them off, your friends and family don't want to be around. And that was also the case. I had a couple of friends who were like, I don't want to hang out with him. And so not only that, but then doing things like trying to get you to move in right away, maybe in a foreign country where you don't know anyone and you don't speak the language, that might be somewhat extreme. But those are all very classic signs and things that happen in the very beginning and things that can pull the wool over your eyes because it seems sweet and exciting. And you do get it. It does feel like a whirlwind romance, which the media portrays as good, exciting things to happen. Maybe especially when you've gone through a painful divorce to then turn around, you know, and have somebody fall in love with you and provide all these things and offer all these things, you can become very susceptible to it.
Of course, and it's that knight in shining armor or Prince Charming, the one you've been waiting for all this time. And the piece that I also pick up on is how he really did attune to your love language and make you think, you know, that this was the one because he was giving you all you'd ever wanted.
Yeah, I was loving it in the beginning. I mean, I remember I had made a comment one time about how I really like the smell of coffee in the morning because it like feels like success or something. I was just saying it's something I've always loved. He takes me to Bed Bath & Beyond and buys me a $1,200 espresso machine that barely even fit in my apartment. It was so outlandish. And again, I'm like, oh, this is so cool. And then goes to Starbucks and buys me one of each type of coffee that they sold there. So he comes home and has like 10 bags of coffee. And I'm thinking again, oh man, this is so, that is so sweet. I barely mentioned that I like the smell of coffee and look at this, you know, romantic thing that he's doing for me.
So seductive.
Oh, it was.
So how frequent is domestic abuse, do you think?
Well, thank you. Thank you for asking. Like I said, October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. I decided this last October to actually use my platforms as a podcaster to spread more awareness. And I did an episode where all I did was read statistics. And I'm glad that you're bringing attention to this topic and asking me because it is becoming more prevalent. What people don't realize is it was a crisis during the pandemic. There was more calls received reporting domestic violence than normal during that time, and it's persisting. But I don't know why people don't like to talk about it, because I'll read a couple to you. Every minute, roughly 20 people are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. This one is a bit jarring. Well, that is jarring, but this might help to bring this to light for people. More women lose their lives to intimate partner violence than by any other means. Why aren't we talking about that? That is shocking. In the U.S. alone, more than 55% of murdered women are killed in relation to intimate partner violence. So if this is not a conversation worth having, I don't know what is. And then I'll just read one more. Well, nearly 1 in 10 women in the U.S. have been raped by an intimate partner in their lifetime. I also really wish we were talking about intimate partner rape more, because it happens. It happened to me. It was terrifying. It was all of the things that you would expect rape to be, except that I didn't feel validated. I have tried to talk to people about this before, and believe it or not, one of the first people I told that my partner had raped me when I had only been with him for a short amount of time, her exact words were, "How can your boyfriend rape you?" And this is something that, I mean, this could be an entire episode on its own, is spousal and intimate partner rape, because I mean, nobody has the right to force themselves on you, no matter what the status of your relationship.
It's within my living memory that rape within marriage was actually made an offense.
When I was in college, I went to ASU, Arizona State University, and I was really involved in anti-domestic violence movements. Anything feminist that happened on my campus, I was either heavily a part of or leading myself. And I remember when it became outlawed in Arizona, I was in college when we fought for that and when it went through. that you can persecute an offender. And I also want people to realize how common it is for women and people to go back to their abuser repeatedly and not to judge us. Most female victims of intimate partner violence were previously victimized by the same offender at rates of 77% of women ages 18 to 24, 76% for ages 25 to 24, and 81% for ages 35 to 49. It is very common to continue to go back. These people strip you of the life you once knew and the life that you once had and even were capable of building. And this is going back, or the fact that someone goes back does not mean that they are weak or vulnerable. It means that they are in a cycle that is very hard to get out of. And I mean, and sometimes impossible. Some women don't even have access to their finances. If there's financial abuse, you could have a bank account that's overdrawn. And so what are you supposed to do? And you don't, not everybody has family to fall back on. I had moments where staying with my parents was so bad and they were so judgmental of me and blamed me for everything. I had moments where I had regretted leaving because it was worse staying with them. And I had no means of really supporting myself. I wasn't capable of looking after myself quite yet. And there was many times where I thought I should have just stuck it out. And so if you don't even have people to fall back on and you don't have any money and you're devastated, you know, what are people supposed to do? Everybody says go to a shelter. Not everyone wants to do that, nor is that accessible to everyone. So
no, and they're not necessarily the most joyful or safe places either.
No, it's really not. Having worked in one, it can actually be a pretty bad situation. So have compassion for people who are stuck in this cycle.
Yeah, I wholeheartedly agree with you. So what would you suggest? How do people escape?
This is complicated. And I do get asked this a lot. And I guess I will first say it's not as easy as that. And so I want to make sure to say that first. You, even with all the resources in the world, might find that this feels completely impossible for you. That being said, I will say I wish that I would have stockpiled some money. I didn't exactly realize how bad it had gotten, and I think I didn't accept it. But I will say, if you are really considering leaving, my situation would have been a lot different if I had maybe been, like I said, stashing money that he didn't know about. That would have really, really helped. And then I will say, find someone who you can talk to about it. Another reason I stayed in it so long was because I didn't have anybody who I was telling. I had become really secretive. And again, partially because of the victim blaming I was going through, I remember calling my mom, for instance, and telling her something that had happened. And she just got fed up and was just like, of course this is happening, and just didn't really even want to hear about it. And also the fact that he was still drinking, I had not told anybody about for various reasons. So if you can find someone who you won't keep secrets from, and who, even if you stay, who you maybe tell everything to, because I really wish that I would have had that perspective and somebody who was encouraging me to get out. And then along those lines, if you're supporting somebody going through this, don't make it about you. Okay. Just because they keep on going back has nothing to do with you. Make it about them and be there. Even if they go back 10 times, be there for them and just keep on listening. So definitely the financial aspect of it, getting someone to talk to, and then simply having a plan. That is very cliched. Everyone says that as far as escaping domestic violence, but it can really help to have a plan in your mind. This will help you to accept the fact that you're in a bad situation, figure out how to possibly execute it, make sure that it's feasible, and so that you'll have a way out. When I was married, my husband had some anger issues, and I remember I hid a bag in my closet because sometimes he would just get so worked up and I would ask him to stop, please stop, and he wouldn't. And so I had actually ended up putting a bag in my closet so that if he got so worked up and wouldn't stop, that I would be able to get the bag and go to a friend's house. And that did happen one night. I had actually contacted two friends and told them what was going on and asked if I could come over if he ever lost control. And they said yes. And that helped a lot. So not just having a plan, but maybe having somebody who will help you execute it, like having people stand by, even if you're in another country, having people who will, you know, root you on and stay on the phone with you and be positive so that you can get out without feeling like you've just failed again.
Yeah, I get that. And what I'm hearing too, all the way through what you've been talking about, is how other people blamed and shamed you, invalidated you. They witnessed you, but then they diminished you.
That is a big part of my story, yes. And again, I was working in every feminist cause possible when I was in college. And I was also a women's studies major. And so had learned a lot about victim blaming, which is the act of blaming the victim or the survivor for having caused the abuse. People listening may think that that sounds just so extreme and hurtful, and I would never do anything like this, but it is very, very common, and I did experience it. Again, having been staying with my family, I know that they were really, really fed up with the situation, which to a certain extent I understand. But I had actually them coming to me and saying, we're really exhausted with all of this, and you really needn't come to us for support again, because you got yourself into this. You knew that he was an alcoholic. You stayed with him anyways, and you've got to figure this out on your own at this point. And it was completely humiliating, and it did lead to me never going to them for support again. But also I internalized all of everything that I was feeling and was just filled with so much shame and, like I said, humiliation, that I found it even harder to make decisions for myself. And then, yes, as I said, it then made me not really want to talk about it with anyone, because I felt embarrassed. And part of the story is that I did go back multiple times, and so I didn't want to answer questions about that. I didn't want people to see me as weak. And as I indicated earlier, that is one way to victim blame, is when you say that, I'm like pounding on my table here, when you say that people who fall into this cycle were vulnerable, or that abusers choose vulnerable people to target, you are blaming the person for being vulnerable and for being a target. And I was told that, you know, if you hadn't been so vulnerable, he wouldn't have even gone after you. And that, and it made me, yeah, it made me feel horrible. And also the trust was completely broken. We were never really able to rebuild that. But I will say, this is also what causes people to stay in it, because they are embarrassed. They don't get the support. They think it's easier to stay. And then I had friends who also just completely stopped talking with me. I don't know if that's exactly victim blaming, but you could just tell that people had started to take it out on me.
Yeah. It's passive blaming, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what would you suggest needs to heal once you've got out and you're coming out the other side? Now, what would you do to heal?
As I will say, with a lot of healing, when it comes to relationships, to remind yourself that it's going to take time. Remind yourself that it is okay to feel devastated, and remind yourself that it will pass. Or maybe not remind yourself, convince yourself that it will pass. Because that might be very hard to believe. I had moments where I can't, I would have never thought I'd get to this point in my life with my divorce and with leaving the domestic abuse. I was just so shattered. I just, never imagined. So convince yourself of it, repeat it, because this is going to, to be really challenging. I will also say finding something new that you can add to your life, whether it be a new fitness routine or a hobby or buying yourself flowers, anything that's additive will really go a long way to convincing your system that it will be okay and that you are going to have positivity in your life again. Spoil yourself, put your self-care first, because everything is going to be out of whack when you leave an abuser. As I said, my PTSD had me devastated physically. And so I needed to kind of trick myself somehow into realizing that life can be pleasant, even. That's how low I was starting from, that I didn't even realize that life could be worth living. And I did have suicidal ideation, which a lot of survivors do. And I will say, a change of environment was really useful for me. That's partially why I went to Australia, is I wasn't able to stay in that home anymore for the reasons I just mentioned. And when I was able to get into a completely new environment, it felt very reassuring to me. I had always enjoyed traveling, so being able to do something like that so soon was very affirming. That went a long way in me realizing that, life could be happy again. And I realized that that's not going to be accessible to everyone. So what can you do for a new and positive environment, whether it be staying with a family member who's not victim blaming you, or staying with a friend temporarily? I know a lot of people who leave have children, so you might, need to get a bit creative. If you're able to have a new environment, that will be positive. A couple other things. I started going to Codependence Anonymous, and that was because a lot of women who stay with alcoholics develop or already have codependent tendencies, which I think a lot of people misunderstand what codependence is. It is not just needing to be with this person or two people who just can't stand to be apart. It is when you facilitate somebody's poor behavior, a lot of times alcoholism, in the hope of gaining something in return. It's subconsciously manipulative in a way. You will hide their disease. I was keeping it secret from everyone in the hopes that things would either get better with us or maybe that he would love me more. I did have in the back of my mind that he would be grateful to me for either caring for him or keeping it a secret, keeping him company, even looking after him in some of the just worst ways if you are not familiar with alcoholism. And so being able to go to these meetings was great. I had so many eye-opening moments learning about codependence and seeing myself in it and realizing that it was a pattern I didn't even know I was wrapped up in, and that there is a way out. I went to an all females meeting for months, and the vibe was really good. A lot of women there who were stuck in similar cycles, and people who had decided to turn their lives around and who were turning their lives around. So I would suggest one of these support groups. And if you don't live in a big city, a lot of these things are taking place online. So definitely go and find this. I'm smiling because it was one of the more positive aspects of my healing was being surrounded by these women. And then last, I'm not sure if this seems obvious or not, but when you decide to leave, I would say own your decision if you can, make it work however you can. And you've got to cut off all communication with this person. I, believe it or not, stayed in some amount of contact with him. He started harassing me. And again, I didn't have friends or family. He started harassing me. He was actually saying he would send me articles about alienation of affection, which is why he had assaulted me in the first place, which I'm sorry, he just complete loss, like no touch with reality, you know? And I did stay in touch for a little while. And it got completely in the way of me moving on with my life. So you've got to cut them out. I know it is hard. There are coaches and counselors who will help you do this. You have got to delete every memory of them, every phone number, anything that you have that might tempt you to get in touch, any way that you think they might be able to contact you, block, 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 anything you can do to remove this person from your life. The longer you go without speaking with them, the easier it's going to get. I promise you. Delete photos, delete old messages, throw away gifts, and get them out. Like I keep on saying, I know that it's challenging, but that might be the absolute easiest thing, or that might be the thing that makes the most difference. I think I should
say. So you're not pulled back to the past. You're focusing on your future.
And you don't have their influence. I mean, this is someone who has seduced you into staying with them, even though they are mentally and physically abusive to you. And so if you're having contact with them, of course, it's going to be easier to get sucked back in. And it will make sense to go back because you're still having the communication, you're still allowing the relationship to continue. And so it's really easy to talk yourself into going back when you've allowed them to have any space in your life whatsoever. As I said, I worked in the shelter system and I went through it myself. And in between going back, leaving and going back, the thing that I saw the most is that women had stayed in touch with the guy, including myself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great. So how can people get in touch with you if they're interested in working with you or getting more resources to inform themselves? What's the best way?
Thank you so much. And thank you for letting me talk about this. I'm asking people to go and follow me on Instagram right now. I post all of the time. I post lots of resources. I post lots about my own life and like to show people that you can have a wonderful life after having gone through all of this. Also, I am quite open about being a member of what we call the solo community. And so I like to show people that I'm happy with or without a relationship. And I live alone. I travel alone. I do a lot of things independent of a relationship. I am not single. I have a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful partner who I only was lucky enough. I don't know if that's the right terminology at all, but I was only able to attract this man and build a healthy relationship because of the work that I did. That being said, I still have a very independent life and like to show people what I'm up to. So it's Janice Formicella, all one word. And if you are going through any type of breakup, that is what my podcast is for. Breakups, broken hearts, and moving on. I've got everything from affirmation tracks for early days of a breakup to episodes about how to move on. I do like 5 tips episodes. I've talked about unhealthy relationships, toxicity, love bombing, healing, going through the grief process, all of it. So go over there and just start listening. I promise you there's a lot of episodes there that will help you get through this.
This is wonderful, Janice. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life. I'd like to know what has been your biggest takeaway from this conversation. Do take a minute and share this with us and visit us on our Facebook page. You can connect with me personally on my email at heather@heathergarbutt.com. If you can think of someone who will benefit from listening to this podcast, please do share it with them. If you have any feedback on how I can improve it, please do reach out to me as I'm always keen to learn more. Thank you so much again for listening, and we'll meet again on the next episode of Revolutionize Your Love Life.